eyes and the going in and out of the room and the pal talk problems and all of it. So I can see how, I can see how that might be very disturbing in the beginning, but you have managed that with such grace, Cheryl. At any rate, I would like to begin today with the prayer from Acts before I get into Experience Your Perfect Soul. This particular prayer starts with, Father, I do not know what is best for me now, in this time and this place, that I may be led back to you. Because I cannot see the path I am ready to walk, take my hand and send me your voice to guide me. I shall go where it asks me to go, and I shall do as it asks me to do in joy and peace and certainty. And that is the first step. And the second step to listening for guidance is this: you must trust. And so, what I noticed in reading further in Acts, in chapter 27, was another something that we were asked to remember. And this is what it says. It's in italics and it's two paragraphs, but I would also like to share that right now as part of my prayer. It feels to me like a reassurance of what I just got through reading, that the voice that guides me, that takes my hand, that's ready to walk with me, is reassuring me once again with this next piece. And it says, in each circumstance and every situation along the way to me, I am there with you, offering help and guidance. Never am I not there. Never can you make a mistake that will drive me away. But it is also true that you can only hear my word and accept my help if you are willing to see that the answer to all things is me. If you choose to limit the circumstances in which I may help, my help is limited. If you choose to solve your problems on your own, my answer remains unheard. Always, I am with you, able to help. Always, without exception, I am there. But you must be willing to know me and accept me in order to receive me as yours. And to that I say, Amen. I found that to be a very comforting couple of paragraphs, and so I may simply just add that on to the first prayer, which comes from Acts 1. I have been in need of comfort lately, and so when I read these types of words and where it's asking us, saying to me, you must remember, and then you can decide, remember first and then decide. It's that reminder for me to ask, to stop and ask, to not just go forward like a bull in a china shop thinking that I know something when in fact I don't know anything. I don't know anything. And to remember that. Also, A Course in Miracles, I do not know what anything, including this, means. And so I don't know how to respond to it, and I'm not going to use my own past learning as the light to guide me now, has always been a prayer that has stuck in my mind and been helpful in times when I have felt distress or discomfort. And I thank you, Cheryl, for sharing from the code. I was not able to listen to all of it. I had a phone call that came through, and so I missed this last piece of it. I definitely want to go back and re-listen. You commented that for you it seems simple, and somehow for me it doesn't quite as simple. So re-listening is always without distractions. And I've had a few distractions while that was going on, so I saw my mind drifting off onto another subject, or onto a phone call, or somebody asking me a question, or whatever. And I find that I absorb best when I'm simply silent and in a purpose that is only to be present with what is, as it is. And all of our thoughts of awakening lately have been about what is and being simply staying with just what is. And as I notice my mind being distracted away by all of these things, the message, which is probably a very simple message and a very clear message, seems somehow more complicated, and there's still a longing to want to revisit it once again. So I'll do that because I like to go over things again and again and again anyway, especially if I notice a resonance in my heart to that very thing. And that's pretty much what I've done with Experience Your Perfect Soul. I have been reading from Michael Langford's book, which is called Experience Your Perfect Soul, A Joyful Path to Self-Realization, for, gosh, I don't know, if I had to guess, it's at least 2 years. I could be wrong, but I do appreciate going over the powerful quotes by Ruby Nelson, Elise Morgan, William Samuel, Eva Bell Werber, Joel S. Goldsmith, Catherine Piedrick, and W. Norman Cooper. The quotes within Experience Your Perfect Soul were selected by Michael Langford as direct path quotes. And that has been my experience of these quotes as well. My program is called No Fluff, because at least the way I see Michael Langford's presentation of all of these various mystics, as he calls them, they are direct path quotes. That has touched me in the same way, and I often feel a wonderful sense of contentment and appreciation and gratitude for this book, and have been happy to reread it for the second time in the sanctuary. So, thank you, Michael Langford, for putting this book forth and asking me to reread it for my own helpfulness, as well as anybody else that has enjoyed it and gotten what they need from this book. So we are beginning on page 249 with honesty of purpose. And before I begin that reading, yesterday Connie Poole was sharing right before our gentle healing class on that very subject from some reading she was doing in NTI. And a lot of our thoughts of awakening, as well as the tips and Regina's sharing, reiterate and remind over and over and over again, asking ourselves, what is my purpose in my words, in my actions, in my life? What is my real purpose? And being honest about that. And if we find that our purpose is a mixed bag, just be honest about that. Even in Karen Worth's meditations, when she instructs us to notice the thoughts that seem to want to intrude on the meditation, when we notice the sensations within the body, when we notice anything that is occurring that draws us away from the purpose of the meditation, for instance, to not let it rattle us in any sort of a way, to not try to change the feeling that might be occurring within the body. For instance, if there's some antsiness about taking the time to meditate, or if there's some resistance to it, or if there's the thought, I have a lot of other things that I need to do, and those thoughts seem to be bombarding us as we're trying to be silent and go within, to not beat ourselves up over that, to be honest that they're occurring. If we're not honest about it, they take on a much greater import in that they can't be let go as easily. Where with your, when you're honest with yourself and you say, this is what's occurring in my mind, I'm looking at it, and you can notice even in those words, I'm looking at it, right away you see that you're already back with your awareness. You're noticing something that's occurring outside what seems to be outside of that awareness, but actually it's within your awareness because you are that awareness. So again, this is entitled Honesty of Purpose, and it's in chapter 7, which we have been on for a while now. It's a long chapter, and it's the last one in the book, and it's by Elise Morgan, and it's called Honesty of Purpose. So here we go. Be true. The soul suffers through ill-alleged statements, withholding truth, withholding honesty, blocks the soul's growth. Let me read that again. Be true. The soul suffers through ill-alleged statements, withholding truth, withholding honesty, blocks the soul's growth. And I just want to pause there because this idea of withholding honesty. One of the ego's preservation strategies is to present this face of innocence, as the Course in Miracles calls it, where we certainly notice everybody else's errors and mistakes and exaggerate those to such a degree that they have us in a suffering state, all the while denying that we're suffering and somehow taking, I don't know, some sick pleasure in the cruelty that we just talked about in one of our thoughts of awakening. And the definition of cruelty that I looked in the dictionary said it was, let me think real quickly, cruelty was... how did it describe it? Let me think of it real quick. I may have to refer back to that particular lesson if I can find it quickly, but it was a good one. Because cruelty is that very thing that we want to hide within ourselves. And again, we see the cruelty in someone else, but we don't see it in ourselves. We are so good at hiding. Here it is. Cruelty is callous indifference. Callous indifference to or pleasure in causing pain and suffering. And this withholding honesty within our own mind, within our own self, is a form of cruelty. It just keeps us callously indifferent to the truth of who we really are, and in support of the imposter self. And that is the purpose of the imposter self, to hide this callous indifference within the mind, to hide those hate. Regina talked very much about all the hate that she was seeing within her relationship with Laurent in the code that Cheryl was just playing for us, and very candid about that hatred, very open about that hatred, exposing that in a very public way on a recording that, you know, is available for anybody to see and hear, and not letting the shame of that, the embarrassment of that, the noticing of that, the wanting it to be different than it was, noticing it in such a way and being so open and honest that she was willing to simply get it out there. That's the only way it's truly healed, is when we bring it up, when we really look at it, when we really see that that's what's going on. That's what's blocking my growth. That's what's causing all the suffering. Not the seeming other that's cruel, my own cruelty that I simply don't want to look at by wearing this face of innocence. And this is asking us right away to be true and telling us the soul suffers through ill-alleged statements, withholding truth, withholding honesty. This blocks the soul's growth. You are not deeply still, hour upon hour, still in your movements, still in your mind. You are not willing to bathe in the spring of true honesty of purpose. Talk inhibits the light. Constant movement covers dishonesty of purpose. And yesterday I shared in Gentle Healing that I had noticed within the word stillness was the word illness, and that illness is that takes many forms, obviously, one of which is that constant movement that covers the dishonesty, where if I keep busy, if I keep moving, if I keep talking, if I keep going in the same direction that I have been accustomed to going without any sort of self-reflection, without adding the ST to the illness to make it stillness, that is when we feel ill, when we feel sick, when we feel diseased, when there's suffering, when there's uncertainty, when there's, the madness of listening to the mind and the thoughts and diving deep into the emotions, letting them swallow us as if they have some sort of a power external to ourselves, which simply is not true. It's like that, like we were sharing from the code, like Regina was sharing from the code. We have these automatic reactions, and Cheryl commented about an automatic reaction that she noticed, and it happens to all of us, where it happens with such lightning speed, it feels as if it's not ours because it is not ours. What is ours is our perception of what is noticed within the code. Instead of claiming it in an ownership sort of way, we can distance ourselves from it by sitting in the stillness, in the quietness, in observation of, in the noticing, being the noticer of the reaction that happened quickly, where we notice that pissiness that comes up right away, and that tendency to want to speak from that attitude. And rather than doing so, we at least stop for a moment and feel that. It's pretty hard not to feel that. And that discomfort in that feeling alone can be enough of a clue if we're willing to want to change, to want to have a purpose other than these habitual attachments we have to pieces of the code that we somehow think are personally mine when they're not at all. And constant movement is one of those ways. Talk is one of those ways. Not being still is one of those ways that helps the dishonesty to simply keep going, to perpetuate itself. It's an ego preservation strategy, all of those things. And I like the thought, talk is cheap, just occurred in my mind. It's so true. So again, you are not deeply still, hour upon hour, still in your movements, still in your mind. You are not willing to bathe in the spring of true honesty of purpose. Talk inhibits the light. Constant movement covers dishonesty of purpose. Overcome evasion. Silently obey the dictates of your soul. Unending peace comes through obedience to the highest. And even Connie Poole yesterday talked about a situation with a friend of hers where she noticed herself after some initial discomfort between her and a friend of hers. She noticed within herself that feeling of like there was something going on between the two of them that neither of them directly addressed. And the initial reaction was in her mind, like, you know, you don't want to really be around that person. You want to evade them. You want to, you know, why should I be around her when I'm feeling uncomfortable around? She's making me feel uncomfortable, or our lack of communication about what's going on is causing discomfort within me. And of course, the ego always wants to blame the other person, when in fact, it's always going on in my own mind. I'm wanting to evade the situation because I have unloving thoughts in my own mind. And what does the ego want to do? It wants to run away from the situation. It wants to say, you know, I don't really want to be around her. I don't really want to deal with her attitude. I don't really want to try to work this out. I don't really want to be my loving self. I don't want to be my loving self. The previous page just said that. This honest, true honesty of purpose, we're not willing to bathe in the spring of that. We're willing to bathe in the pigsty instead, the voice that says, hey, you don't have to put up with this crap. You don't have to put up with her attitude. You don't have to put up with, you know, some sort of past history or some sort of present discomfort. Just, you know, leave the situation and you don't have to deal with it. But the fact of the matter is we do have to deal with it. We are dealing with it in our own mind. We're not overcoming anything by stepping away and saying, you know, I don't need friends like that. Where's the solution there for you? Where's the solution there for yourself? Is there peace, or am I evading what's really going on? And it's that I'm the problem here. I'm the one, you know, looking at her as if she's the problem, rather than pointing the finger back at myself. Noticing my own distorted thoughts, my own dishonesty within myself, you know, sugarcoating the lie that I'm telling myself that I'm, you know, I'm basically kind and loving and caring, and I really want to make an effort, but she came into the situation with an attitude. And therefore now I have an attitude. And that might be your initial reaction, but if that's part of the code, I can change my reaction to whatever is going on simply by noticing all of that. And Connie did notice. Connie was sharing that she did notice and asking herself, you know, do I want to be the love that is my purpose? My true purpose is to be the love that I am. Do I want that? Really? And if we do, we can change the purpose of whatever thought comes into the mind, whatever feeling arises in the body. We can change the habitual reaction, the automatic response, just by being still, by quieting the mind that wants to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And add some story into it, some excuse about why you should evade whatever is going on. And this is telling us to overcome that evasion by silently obeying the dictates of the soul. Do you think the soul is sharing that we should, you know, embrace our pissy attitudes and our bad habits and our automatic ways of reacting and our stagnant relationships and our hatred? And no. Why would we be obedient to that? Our feeling alone, you know, how does this make me feel? That alone should be enough of an impetus to get us to stop for a minute and say, do I really want to treat myself this way? Is this really my purpose? And clearly it's not. It ends with telling us that unending peace, not just temporary peace, not just momentary peace, not just, you know, faking that you're at peace when you're really not. Faking peace is lying to yourself. I'm going to act all cool, you know, when I'm in the presence of this person that I feel discomfort around, but I'm going to be cool about it. All the while, like we're, you know, flapping our wings like, you know, like a duck underwater. You see, it's, you know, on the surface, it looks like it's just gliding along, but you know those little feet are paddling away. And that's how it is when we listen to that fake peace in these situations, when we're lying to ourselves, when we're pretending that, you know, I'm cool with this. This is all good. I'm really a loving, caring person. And you walk away from the situation and think, God, I hope I don't run into her again. I mean, listen to what you say in your own mind and see what your attitude really is. And maybe that, you know, that relief, that quick little juice of relief that, oh, I got away from that situation because I didn't want to deal with it and she didn't want to deal with it. Thank God. Who wants to deal with conflict? That's such a short-lived peace, if you even want to call it peace, that comes through obedience to the lowest possible vibration that we could possibly choose. Why would we obey that? Why? Who is the I that listens to that voice? Is that a reflection of my highest purpose? Am I choosing the highest vibration possible? And if I'm not, I can change my mind. I can change my mind. And that change in mind is the slit that we slip through within the code that changes what we offer back into the code and to ourselves. I'm always the first point of my own attack. I'm always the first point of my own love. So again, overcome evasion, silently obey the dictates of your soul. Unending peace comes through obedience to the highest. Look full-facedly to truth and know that truth reigns in your soul now. Begin this day to dwell in silent, open security. Security gained through honesty of purpose. Yeah, you know, again, how much security can we feel when we're unwilling to change our mind? And, you know, in answering my own question, none. Temporary security is a lie. And yet that is what the imposter self offers all the time. Here, if you just listen to me right in this moment, right here, right now, and get your way, keep your opinion, you know, spout your truth, your individual personalized version of truth. And that's, of course, in quotes, because it's not true at all. It's a big lie. And that's the way you'll remain secure. If you listen to me, stay in control. You can handle this. Alone, you can have your way, exercise your self-will. That security is not security. That's the lie. It's not an open security at all. It's a closed loop. That loop of what I think, I see, what I see, I experience, and what I experience, I think about some more. How do you get out of that loop? That's the loop the imposter self offers. And it says, if you stay in this loop, you'll be secure. And we know it's not true. How do we know? By how we feel. So again, begin this day to dwell in silent, open security, security gained through honesty of purpose. Your atmosphere is redundant with the thought feeling flowing in your consciousness. Therefore, your thought must be true, for its waxen form is molded into your life. Yeah. And that's talking about the code. That's talking about the loop. That's talking about being unwilling to change our habits, you know, the redundancy of a mediocre life, a little self living a crummy existence and deciding that's all there is. That's all there is to is. What I think is all there is to is. These feelings are all I know, therefore they must be true. These thoughts are all I know, so it must be true. And they're in in the space of consciousness or the listening to the mind, the voice in the mind that flows all the time. It will never shut up. That foreground of awareness, and rather than resting in the background, the noticer of this redundancy, this atmosphere of non-security, non-peace, non-joy, non-love, floundering with what my purpose is, not knowing what to believe, what to listen to, what to do, what to say, where to go, not knowing anything, but acting as if it does know. When I listen to those thoughts, when I believe those thoughts, when I indulge those feelings, when I actually think they're true, this is talking about it forming a waxen mold. You ever been to one of those wax museums and seen those, you know, the famous people that you see that are, they're like so weird looking. I mean, and that's exactly what's going on with this personality body form when there's belief in that as the truth of my life. When it's simply the vehicle through which all life flows. It doesn't have to be seen as anything other than that. It doesn't have to be hated. It doesn't have to be adored. It doesn't have to be anything, because it is nothing. Yet this is telling us that your atmosphere is redundant with the thought feeling flowing in your consciousness. Therefore, your thought must be true, for its waxen form is molded in your life. Give yourself space. Give yourself freedom to dwell in me. And my word will be indelibly written in the mind. The senses quickly agree to what the mind accepts. By faithfully looking to me, faithfully abiding in my love, my wisdom, the mind is quietly redeemed. That's an interesting choice of words. The mind is quietly redeemed, like taken back. You know, it's almost as if the mind, which is simply the thoughts that occur. I mean, what is the mind? Have you ever been able to find your mind? If you go looking within, you know, when you're in silence and you're looking for the mind, have you ever found it? I haven't. I've never found it. And what is the mind? Some describe the mind as simply the thoughts that occur within what? Your head? Have you ever been able to find the thoughts? How are they appearing to you? Have you ever looked at that? How are they appearing to you? Do you see letters in your head? Do you see sentences? Do you actually see something that we call thoughts? Do you see images in the mind and call those thoughts? Have you been able to find those, like viscerally feel those, grasp those, know those intimately? And yet we listen to this thing called mind or these thoughts as if it's something apart from us, like the two voices. the voice of love and the voice of the imposter self. Who sees that? Who notices that? Who notices when I have a loving thought, and who notices when I have a hateful thought? It's not about denying that either one of them is occurring, but I'm the noticer. I'm in the background. I'm not in the foreground. And there really is no background and foreground, but until the split mind is fully healed, it seems to be that way. It's just a manner of speaking. And when we can really see what's going on and notice it dispassionately, without involvement, without reacting to whatever occurs in the mind, whatever thought occurs in the mind, and use discernment and take in, take back only the love that's given, because that's the truth of who I am. That is my true self, and that true self does deserve my attention. So when the loving thoughts are occurring, when the loving feelings are expressing themselves, rejoice in that. Truly, rejoice in that. And how does that happen? By faithfully looking to me, to my true self, to the Christ mind, to God, to whatever you want to call it. It's all me. When I faithfully abide in that love, when I faithfully abide in that wisdom, when I faithfully abide in my right mind, the mind is quietly redeemed. It's taken back. It's not like there's some, you know, loose cannon in charge of my life. I'm that loose cannon as an ego imposter self. And I'm not even that. That's why this is encouraging us over and over and over again. Watch what goes on. Just watch it. We redeem our mind through the watching of it and not attaching to any of it, and rejoicing in the loving aspect of it. But how do we do that? Through faith. Faithfully looking and faithfully abiding, no matter what. No matter what seems to be happening within the world, no matter what. No questions need be asked. No questions need be answered. No arrangements need be made. You prolong the day of attainment by living with a question mark. I don't have to know. I don't have to figure it out. As if I could, anyway. That's another lie. Live with the question mark. Live in the now. I was having a conversation with Karen Worth this week, and we were sharing just about how everything really is only now. For all the worry that might go on in the mind, or all the concern that might be conjured up by the imposter, all the craziness that it offers for something in the future. It's not even happening. That's happening now, just in the sense of it's occurring within your mind now. But is the actual situation that you're worried about going on? It's not even going on. And I'm wasting a now moment where love could be my experience, where peace could be my experience, where wisdom could be clear in my awareness by thinking, I have to know. I have to control this. I have to figure this out. I have to make this happen. Nobody's going to take care of you but you. How many of us have told ourselves that? Nobody cares about you the way you care about you. You have to protect yourself. All, you know, we have so many ways that we lie to ourselves. And here's this telling us, you don't need to ask any questions. You don't need to have any answers. You don't need to arrange anything. You don't need to make it happen. And when we do that, we prolong the day of attainment where the mind is quietly redeemed, where the love can appear, where the wisdom can flow easily, where we can be told simply by asking, you know, in the truest sense, waking up with, hey, you know, what am I to do today in your service of being obedient to the highest vibrational level that I'm capable of right now? Because I don't know. I can live within the question mark. I don't know. That's why I'm asking. Why else would we ask? I mean, we ask when we don't know. And the fact is, we don't know. And being okay with that. Being right here, right now, present with what is. It's so much easier when I stay there. And when Karen and I was speaking, she was referring to, you know, a moment she noticed in her own mind, and it was in regards to that fella in Korea that was, you know, shown on the news, practically being carried off the plane in, you know, a state of, he died. I mean, he was very near death even then. And the upset that she noticed within herself and being directed back to the now moment when all was simply well. And because the mind was focused on something that had already occurred, or the mind can be focused on a future event, both of which have nothing to do with presence, with isness right now, how we can lie to ourselves and work ourselves into a false state that doesn't even exist based on a memory or a projection into the future. And we were just sharing between the two of us how habitual that is, and how we are working on being present with what is, not with what seems to be, what has occurred, what I'm remembering, what I'm thinking about, what might be happening, all of that. That's when the questions come up. That's when we think we need answers. That's when we think we have to make all kinds of arrangements. That's when we drive ourselves absolutely crazy, because we can't live with not knowing somehow, is what the ego says. You have to know. That's where your security is. You have to know. It's a lie. It's not true. Yeah. It was all imagination in the mind, exactly. That's all it ever is, unless we're listening to the voice of truth, of love, of wisdom. So when your heart or mind is divided, you are confused, restless. When all questions are done away with and content divine content reigns in your soul, fear of the future, fear of death is overcome. You have taken it for granted that progress comes through questions. Have you ever tried progress through love? And you know, even as I read that, we're taught from a very young age to ask questions, even though the I know mind has a lot of shame around not knowing. And I remember even being back in school and feeling dumb around, you know, whatever it, my algebra. And rather than asking a question and appearing stupid, you sit with the ignorance, unlearning, unaware, the shame, the I'm not good enough, the why does everybody get it but me? And we're encouraged, you know, ask questions. And as you ask a question, maybe like, you know, somebody's laughing at your question, or somebody is like, wow, you know, whispering like what a dope she is, or whatever it might be. We often laugh when we're watching, if we watch Jeopardy. You know, the you guys are familiar with Jeopardy, and often, you know, you answer the question that they ask you, and sometimes, like, if it'll be about, you know, Shakespearean literature, I have no idea about any of that, and sometimes I'll just say, my response is, what is I wish I knew, or what is I have no idea, that would be my answer, and I get a big laugh about that, because it's like, whatever, who cares if you don't know about that? Who cares if you don't know? Is that really what's important? We're never taught to ask questions about the truth of who we are. It's always about everything that's made up. So we somehow think that progress comes from asking these questions. The more I know about algebra, the more I know about Shakespeare, the more I know about quantum physics, the more I know about spirituality, the more I know about the world, the more I know about geography, the more I know about, you know, on and on and on and on and on and on, that's going to make me somehow better or equal to or acceptable or worthy or and it's never ending. It's never ending. Has it ever brought complete satisfaction to be this walking encyclopedia of information when thoughts are simply the words of our native language in our mind that are add-ons from the get-go to the truth of who we really are? They have nothing to do with who we really are. They're a mess that we then try to untangle as we come to realize, this isn't even me. Who am I? Somebody gave me a name. I seem to be a gender. I seem to play these roles. I seem to have these attitudes, these personality traits, this life experience, this nuclear family, this extended family of friends, my church peeps, you know, my neighborhood. I seem to be all that. And when you start to unravel, is that really me? It's all the add-on to the truth of who you are. Yes, I exist, but all that other stuff that I just mentioned and more isn't progress. We progress when we unravel all that and we take off the mask. None of it's me. I am before all that, prior to that. Show me, Father, the truth of who I am. And that progress comes through loving ourselves in that way, turning our attention towards that self. So this is the last piece I'm going to be reading in this section, which was called Honesty of Purpose. You have forced issues and have suffered accordingly. You have forced issues and have suffered accordingly. Leave all uncertainty behind you and start now, this day, a new, definite existence. And you will be fresh, rested, able to fulfill what comes to you. You will not waste your energy on useless mental arguments. So true. Useless mental arguments. And most of the time, you know, that's only, we might be arguing verbally, but the argument always starts in my own mind. Somebody says something, I disagree. Somebody says something, I have a different opinion. Somebody says something, I want to blast them with what I know. Somebody says something, I make a judgment. It's a waste of energy. Those are all add-ons, lies. They have no meaning whatsoever, none. And it's simply about noticing that. So this fresh, rested, definite existence, which is available in this now, right now, that which leaves all uncertainty behind, that which leaves all suffering behind, that which doesn't force any sort of an issue, but rests content within its own self. All it knows is itself. Love only knows itself. That's what we're asked to give our attention to. And with that, I am going to give up the mic. I started on page, for Cheryl, I started on page, halfway down on page 249, and I will be beginning on page 252 next week. So I ended on 251, and we'll start next week on 252. Thanks, guys, for joining me. I appreciate it, and I love you all. I'm giving up the mic. Thanks.